Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, from Newmarket, Indiana, and L&M Commodities, Wayne Nelson and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. USDA on Thursday of this week released its monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Many were expecting there would be some changes in both the domestic and the global numbers. In particular, they thought that they might have a change in the ending stocks for soybeans, Kurt Kimmel. However, USDA in its wisdom decided to leave those at 420 million bushels. Why do you think that was the case, and were they right to do so?
Well, I think they're probably taking a conservative approach to it. It caught the trade by surprise because looking at real good demand on the U.S. side, exports continue to roll right along. Southern Hemisphere, that's still a moving target, but when you look at the reports from the consultants out of the Southern Hemisphere, they are still fairly aggressive with a higher Brazilian crop, and they're not quite aggressive as the trade is with that smaller Argentine crop. So it's going to take time. Argentina's still got some real wet areas and some real dry areas. So in another 2 to 3 weeks, we'll have a lot more field results to get a better handle on it.
In fact, Merrill Crowley, USDA, did not change their Brazilian number. It still stands at 104 million metric tons for the soybeans, although CONAB on Thursday morning, kind of a quasi-professional unit of the Brazilian government that does do some work in trying to indicate how big that crop might be, said, well, it's bigger than that, 105.6. Will we see USDA raise their number up eventually?
I would imagine we will see them raise it up. They're just always, like Kurt said, conservative and slow to make any new changes to that. We've still got a lot of weather to go down there, so it won't hurt this crop so much, but it might hurt the secondary crop. So, yeah, I think they're just biding their time for right now.
And your opinion of what the result of all these numbers meant for the soybean market during the day, besides the short drop that we had on Thursday?
Well, I think that the market is just looking. These were neutral numbers. We're going to look at again and see what the weather does over the weekend in Brazil. We've got 8 to 10 inches of rain possibly over the north that could hamper their harvest and also cut back a little bit. We've got some heavy rains coming into the northern part of Argentina that may or may not get into the area that was damaged bad before. And then again, the big thing that really matters is what's China going to do as far as buying. They bought 7 or 8 loads of beans on Thursday. You know, will they continue to do that on Friday, on Monday, and whatever? Or are they going to cut back and say, hey, we saw some really good numbers here, and we're going to take it easy for a little while?
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Wayne, I'd like to follow up with you on that one just a bit. On Thursday afternoon during the closing market report, Dan told us two things, reminded us, one, that China had been on holiday the week before and was surprised by the purchases they made earlier this week that they were for summertime delivery. Why is that a surprise, and what difference does it make?
Well, that's really surprising, the fact that generally, once they're able to switch over to South America, it's a little bit cheaper and they stay away from the U.S. and they only come back when they really need something. So is that telling us that maybe they're looking, that Brazil doesn't have enough beans for them, maybe their appetite's going to be big, and they want to spread it out? But generally, at this point in time, they're not booking anything from us past March.
Oftentimes, too, some of these be option origins, so they have a choice on origin of delivery on it, but two, you know, trucker strike, dock strike, some weather delays, and Wayne's right. You know, they're going to be flexible here for a while.
Bottom line, what do producers think about their new crop sales for soybeans? And I suppose also they may have some gambling stocks left from the old crop.
The new crop sales, I'm waiting to be patient. I think this rally actually has more legs to it. I see slow farmer selling down in the southern area, and that might be why China's buying some of the summer crop as an insurance against maybe not as much being sold. You've got slow Brazilian farmer selling. You've got almost twice as much lineup at the Gulf. So not to mention you've got the possibility of inflation. You've got the funds using some of the beans as a hedge against the stock market. And I think we don't know what our weather's like here. We don't know what the weather in the second half for South America is going to be. And so I think we still got some room to the upside to move.
On Thursday afternoon again, and this happened Thursday and I think Wednesday too with Drew Lerner. So Mike Tenor and Drew Lerner both telling us that there should be some rainfall in Brazil. That is one of those reasons I think maybe there could be a slowdown in the harvest season in Mato Grosso in particular.
Well, that's what we've been seeing, a slowdown with these what you would call pesky rains, because they're not enough to really flood out the crop, but they're enough to keep them from moving along. I don't think we realize up here down there that's, you know, it's a southern climate, arid jungle climate, and if the beans get wet by the time they get to the port, they're moldy already.
What do you think is into consideration of the real versus the dollar and whether producers in South America are waiting to make new crop sales for some strength to come back into their marketplace based on the foreign exchange?
Well, that's a moving target, and you got to remember that country is a third world country. Their currency is always going to be a discount to the U.S., and oftentimes they'll try to hang on to it for some inflationary concerns. A lot of those beans are traded for direct inputs, too, so there's a lot of moving parts there. Overall, I think those beans are going to be moved. China wants them between now and next fall before our beans come on the market, and they're not going to hang on to them that long.
What are the pitfalls you see between now and the 31st of March when the acreage report comes out, if any?
Well, there's a lot of things to watch. The main thing is Trump, and a lot of people are concerned about whether or not he will say something or make somebody mad. In agriculture, I'm not quite that concerned. I think that these countries need food, and they're going to continue to buy food. It's more of the non-agriculture commodities that could be a risk. But the other thing is, like Wayne hinted on, we'll watch the South American weather. Even though transportation still, roads are better than what they used to, getting the crop out and getting the move to the ports is going to be a concern, because what we hear is ships down there, there's twice as many ships, they're ready to go. It's a matter of getting them loaded and moved.
I think what we're going to be watching is the corn-bean ratio, Todd. You take a look at it and you say, wow, we've really popped up here. We're right close to $4 on December corn. You get that up 410, 420, and all of a sudden we got guys saying, ooh, I'm not going to switch near as many acres to beans, and that's what could affect the bean market.
On acreage, for the U.S., it's going to depend, I think, more on the insurance right now. Current insurance rates running 395 corn, 1018, almost 1019 on beans. And again, the stocks-to-use ratio, 2.57. Last year, that same stocks-to-use ratio was 2.58, give or take, and we saw more bean acres. So I think we're going to lean toward more bean acres, but we still have a lot of time left to decide whether or not we're going to go with beans or corn. And I think as things play out, and maybe if the corn can actually break above $4, then you might see more going to the corn. But I think right now, things are pretty well planned.
Wall Street Journal earlier in the week pointing to the West saying, hey, they're in pretty rough shape as it is in terms of agriculture. We confirmed that from Matt Bennett on Friday afternoon. He's been traveling out there. He was in the Dakotas. Wall Street Journal was talking about Kansas. Even if the ratio closes in, as Wayne has suggested, do you think that they will plant the cheaper crop one way or the other based on what their bankers are telling them?
If it's strictly based on what the bankers are telling them, I'm sure they're going to go with more beans. You know, it just depends. As you go down the road, one guy's really hurting, the other guy's done a pretty good job, so he can afford to do it. You know, that's. But if it's just strictly on the banker, I would say it's going to be beans.
I think Merrill's right. I think that there's going to be some people are in a situation they don't have a choice. But I think the guys that have a choice, that are a little better financed, they're going to look at the ratio and see which they like to plant. You know, the Midwest farmers love to plant corn.
It's going to make the March 31st acreage production or acreage report really important to watch and an interesting one to consider going into it. Could show some numbers that maybe the trade doesn't expect.
Well, we'll see if there's any surprise. That's going to be a survey. Those are intentions. Reality will be weather and actually what the banker says at the last minute. But, yeah, you plug those numbers in, 4 million less 2 to 4 million less corn acres, 4 to 5 million more bean acres. Yeah, good growing conditions, you're going to have ample supplies of beans. But you take 2 to 4 million acres off of corn, and you take trend line yield or weather, you can tighten in corn ending stocks, you know, closer down to 1.5 billion bushels. So there's a lot of moving parts here. There's a lot of market in front of us.
I want to come to old crop soybeans for a bit and talk about basis. How has that been over the last month or so? Has it widened out?
It sure has, Todd. As the markets went up and gained here, we've seemed to widen out. You know, for up 5 cents, we're only really up 2 cents in the cash or 2.5 cents. And especially now we're noticing in the northern counties of Illinois, they're going to post the roads this weekend. So Monday they won't be able to haul stuff. But let's face it. Farmers are basically 80-85% sold out of their old beans. The commercials have them in hand. They're not bidding up for them. They've got them in hand.
Yeah, so explain that to me. Why is it? Because I understand the commercials own most of them. They probably are in storage in their own grain elevators. So the basis isn't being bid up. So is it because they feel like they have them trapped and they're just waiting for them to deliver at a lower basis rate?
They've got on hand what they need. They haven't got them sold yet. I don't have to push to sell. Do I pay up for something that I've got a stock of, you know? And that's the way the elevators are right now. They're in charge, the old bean market.
So the old bean market is in charge. When will the elevators have to move?
Oh, the elevators, they'll move every chance they get if they get a good basis here. You know, we're looking down at the Gulf, and every chance they get, they're going to be trying to pick up some of this export business. But they're either in an elevator where they can get moved there in time for the sale to be made, and they've got plenty to load a few boats out down at the Gulf right now. You can bet that ADM, Cargill, Dreyfus, and all those people have got enough to load 10 to 12 boats sitting down at the Gulf right now.
Any reason to think that because this is in commercial hands, and normally we would say it's in strong hands, but it's apparently so much of it around that it's supply that is leading that end of the marketplace and demand can wait around for this marketplace. Any reason to think that price would be devalued for soybeans because of this? It's, I guess, a bit of an unusual event for soybeans. Do you understand what I'm asking? So there's so many beans around, and they're all in the elevators. The elevators own a larger stock than they might normally, I suppose, at this point. I think that's actually true. So there's enough around. There's no need for the end user really to bid very much supply in. But does it have an impact on price in Chicago very much, or is it simply a basis play because that's how the grain elevators work?
That's right, Todd. The grain elevators are hedged. They're fine. They're not considering flat price because they own the beans already. They're worried about flat price before they buy the beans from the farmer. Once they get in their hands, it's all about basis and what basis they load those out at and when they do. So what they're looking for is the idea is to get them moved out, you know, take advantage of what it is, but they can sit tight with it. They're not having to pay up the farmer. And if they buy some beans now, let's face it, they're buying them at a 5 or 10 cent wider basis, so they can afford to hold those even longer.
Before we leave the bean market and go to corn, let's check and see, is everybody still of a mind if producers haven't made new crop sales, should they make new crop sales, 990 cash and above?
I want to be patient on the bean sales. And you were talking about the old crop basis. The new crop basis for beans is pretty lousy as well. And, you know, so if somebody's going to make new crop sales, look at doing it at the board, a hedge to arrive contract, so they leave the basis open to go tighter. But, yeah, I think beans have got farther to go, and I want to be patient.
Yeah, I think you do a little scale-up selling in here, but beans are going to be a tough one to figure here because of the fact that 9 out of 10 speculators love owning beans, so it's going to be tough to really stop them from owning beans here over the short term. We like having the price floor in place. You can lock in a price floor at $10. If the market moves higher, you have cash beans to sell higher. If the market goes lower, you got some coverage. So I think you got to have a marketing plan that's flexible to take advantage of price and also basis opportunities when you market your grain next fall.
I agree with Kurt on a lot of things he said there. We are saying for the acres that you're going to put extra in beans, if you've basically decided that, you've ordered the beans ready to go, we want to have some $10 cash beans right close to it sold. We do feel that that's still the way to go because we think we can make money at $10 cash beans. If it's the worst sale we make, we're still thrilled to death. But I mean, along the way, are we going to push sales in a hurry here now? No, we're probably not going to push a lot more over our 30%. Like
Merrill was saying, I think there is some chances here. You know, you look at the cycles, you know, the charts all look like we're going up. The Chinese are very busy coming in here. We've got Brazil holding back on their sales because of the currency exchange rates. And we've still got a lot of things up in the air as far as weather and what we're going to plant.
Let's turn our attention now to the corn market. USDA said, hey, we think ethanol, as the numbers have shown, has been really good. And they managed to lower the ending stocks. What were the changes like on the supply and demand tables today, Merrill?
Well, we saw an increased usage for the ethanol. And the thing that concerns me there is, while I think everything's running really well for ethanol, and I don't think we're going to have any unforeseen issues with the Trump administration in that regard, we are seeing China basically boycott our DDGs and our ethanol, and we were selling quite a bit to them early on, or last year, I should say 2015. We saw them go from $1.6 billion worth of sales of ethanol and DDGs to China down to $300 million. And that's quite a shock, and what is all that going to go here in the U.S.? Can we keep up, and have we going to have a market for those DDGs and that ethanol?
With a slightly carryout estimate, if this demand stays strong and they keep lowering that carryout somewhat, you roll that into next crop here for smaller acres, it's going to tighten up the supply-demand balance sheet. But on corn, when you look at the world supply-demand balance sheet there on Thursday, basically the Chinese numbers are starting to tighten up, and that long-term could be somewhat supportive.
So USDA changed the ethanol number by 35 million bushels, an increase. What was your view of the ending stocks number for corn?
Well, I think that it's good. We reduced it. We can keep reducing it. We continue to see good feed usage. We continue to see good tremendous grind in the ethanol. And our exports have been very good. We keep shipping out corn every week, and that's not going to slow down like the beans have. So we've got a long ways to go, and we're way ahead of last year in our percentage sold.
And the ending stocks number for corn is 2.320 billion bushels. I want to follow up very quickly with something you mentioned about the DDGs, because there are a lot of DDGs around. There's a lot of sorghum around. There's a lot of bean meal around. These are all protein replacements, and they're pretty interchangeable. What does this tell you about the market and the potential for any of those things to have an impact?
They are going to be competitive in a protein source. There's no doubt about it. On the flip side of it, we are seeing livestock increase, the poultry, the pork, the beef. We're seeing an increase of that about 3 to 4% over last year. So there are animals to utilize those feedstuffs. So right now we're seeing wider bean meal basis, which is probably telling us that there isn't as much demand as before. So again, that's why I was talking about the China rejecting all those. It does come into play. I would like to say real quick, our stocks to use is like in the U.S. corn is 15.87. Back in 2014, it got down to around 10 or a little bit less, right in that area. Same with world numbers. We saw 520 corn. So, you know, all you're saying is you got to take off 5.8% and you're right back down to those levels. That's not a lot. And in the beans, it's the same situation. The current stocks use is 10.22. I was always taught if it got below 10%, you got a strong market. And yet our current stocks, 10.22, it did get down around 7.5% stocks to use in 2014. We also had $15.36 beans as a high for 2014. So while we've got a lot of stocks, we've got a lot of usage. And it's yet to be determined how it's going to all balance out.
Yeah, the DDGs, you know, China was a big market, but it's not the only market. There's other countries around the world, too, we'll ship to on that. But like Merle hit on there, livestock numbers are on the rise in through here. Guys are going to have an opportunity to feed a little cheaper in through here, so we're going to have a lot fatter animals coming into town when it's all said and done.
Does the disparity in the bean meal market, meaning it appears to be pretty high at this point, given the number of supplies that are around, give you any pause to consider the whole of the bean complex?
But China is still hanging in there, and they are very much in demand. You know, they want the bean meal. They want to feed their hogs and everything over there. That's where the most of it's disappeared. Yes, now we're going to have some trouble getting rid of some of our bean meal at the end of the year here in the U.S. because of all the DDGs. It's going to cut back some on it like that. But along the way, what we have to remember right now, the thing that's really driving the market is the funds. let's face it, the funds have been, all the last 2 weeks have been increasing every day. Our open interest keeps going up as we move on up here. So they've got a real appetite here, and we can go counter what you would say supply demand on this one, and we can for a couple weeks. And that's sort of what Dan was talking about, I think, as we when you referred to him there today, that he thinks these funds are going to drive this market, and we aren't going to be a supply-demand-driven market for maybe the next 3 to 4 weeks.
And also, along what Wayne is saying about how China's using DDGs, not DDGs, I'm sorry, soybean meal. Well, they cut back their DDGs. They cut back their sorghum use. They cut back their wheat use. Now they have a protein shortage problem. How are they going to replace it, if not with bean meal?
Let's come back to the corn market at this point for old and new crop corn. And I think we probably ought to take old crop up in some more depth. Producers have an awful lot of old crop corn, unlike the soybeans, which have all been marketed, or most of them. That's sitting probably either in commercial storage. I would think a lot of it's still in the bin. Do they need to consider their options for that? Which is in the bin at this point, are they okay just thinking that's safe to leave there for quite some time?
Well, not only in the bin, you drive around, you see piles everywhere. You're driving a lot. You probably have a better idea how many piles you're seeing. What I drive and what I see is the piles are still there. We really don't ever see the corn market take off until those piles start to disappear. And, you know, farmers want to take it in, so maybe they're not pulling it out of the pile because they like to do that all at once. Once they untarp it, it'll go bad if they don't get it cleaned out. So I think the corn market is going to be a slow, methodical grind. And as long, and I think higher, and as long as we're fighting those farmer-owned bushels that are going to be released at certain levels, it's just going to slowly continue to move up unless we find out we're going to have more acres of corn and better weather.
So we're talking about releases at 375, 380, 390, 410, 420, those kinds of things?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think you got to use a scale-up selling approach. Basically, if you look at the March futures near this 373 level, we're getting to some areas, the old head and shoulders bottom, some major retracement levels back to last summer's highs that probably going to give us a little bit of resistance in here. But no, I like seeing guys move it, meet some cash flow needs. Option volatility is at some historically low levels. So if you want to still be in the game, there's some creative option strategies where you can get back in the market for 10 to 20 cents and still maintain ownership through the summer in case we do see some weather concerns.
You know, we sold some corn today at 372. Today we've been waiting on that. That's been a resistance up there. If we can break and go back and do and push a little higher like the guys are talking about here, we're going to sell some more at 377, some more at 382, and scale on in like Kurt was talking about. All the guys are looking at here and whatever, and if we see a setback, in other words, we're either going to buy the board to replace some of this for that summer rally, because we're talking, some of our favorite weathermen are saying, not like last year, like weather 360, but we are saying it does not look as good a growing season as the last 2 years. There will be blips, there will be bumps, and we will have some chances. So we're looking at some possible weather rallies. So we're thinking of possibly re-owning some, either at a lower level or, like Kurt said, with options.
Is the strength solely based on acreage, or is there some reason other than that? So looking forward, is it simply the March 31 number, or is there some other event there that's thinking, hey, strength? And I know you talked about the weather, but that's a long ways out. But for the current time, it really is just about the acreage mix, right?
That's the main thing. But the other thing that's hiding back here and why these funds are so excited is they think there's going to be inflation. They think these commodities are going to see some inflationary value come in and what they're looking at. And they're depending on this new administration to sort of bring back some inflation fears.
Do we believe that'll happen? Will there be inflation? Have we watched the Fed? Do they give us an indication that we'll move?
Yeah, there's going to be inflation, I'm pretty sure. And it's interesting, I hadn't really come across this term until fairly recently. There is demand pull and cost push inflation. And we're basically looking at cost push. And that tends to help the commodities a little bit better than, say, a demand pull.
It depends what sector you're talking about. There's always been inflation. I don't know about your guys' health care premiums, but God darn, that's inflated. And I know some guys paying $24,000 a year for health insurance. And farm ground, $15,000, that's highly inflated. So there's already been inflation. Inflation as a whole is the nation. I think the Fed's going to probably try to keep that in check. Now, we will see some higher interest rates over time. I think we're looking at 2 to 3 hike rates here in 2017.
So proceed with caution for sales, but make corn sales is the word of the day then.
Yeah, I think you got to figure out where you are, which is point A, and I think you got to figure out where you want to go, which is point B, and that's most of our jobs here, to get you from point A to point B. The key is, I don't know if you want to give up ownership, total ownership of corn at these lower levels in through here, but I think you got to meet cash flow needs, stay flexible to take advantage of some potential rallies here to play catch up from these lower levels.
Does that mean a basis contract in corn or some other kind of program?
Well, basis has been real eye-catching to the producer. When an elevator talks to a guy about basis contract, the first thing the producer hears is, I get 80% of my money. And wow, that's great. But why don't you do a strategy where you get 100% of your money and still retain ownership? I've had guys call me up, clear back last summer there when some of these basis contracts were coming due, and said, elevator called me up, I've got to possibly write the elevator a check. And now, how do these basis contracts work? So, yes, it is a way to generate some money, but please take the opportunity to understand how they work. And I'd be more inclined to move the cash grain and re-own it. That way you've got 100% control and you know where you're at.
I agree with Kurt wholeheartedly, Todd. I mean, as we look at that, we're putting a bottom in this market when we, price it and buy a call, or price it and buy a we'll call spread or something like that. Basis contract doesn't put a bottom in anything. I mean, that can go right on down. Run grain elevators for years. Sometimes you have to ask people for, because it goes down more than 20%, and it's no fun for either side.
Let's get a final word from each of you for the day. I think we'll start with you, Merrill Crowley, your final word for our listeners.
Like I said, I'm really thinking that prices can go higher. I think there's a lot of good things working for the corn and bean market, along with the wheat market out here. Now, that said, last year I was thinking the same thing, and we ended up with a short-term weather pop, and the markets went to $4, a productive, profitable level, and backed off, and, you know, next thing you know, we didn't have it. So I think what Kurt says about being flexible, whether you want to use puts, whether you want to sell the board outright with this small movements in the board price on corn, I think using the actual futures is a great idea. So, you know, get your pencil pushed, find out what your costs are, and decide where you're going to do the majority of your protection and keep it flexible.
Yeah, I think flexibility is the key, Merle. You really hit it on the head. Now, also, too, we kind of was optimistic today. I don't know about the other two guys here, but I'm not endorsing holding on to cash grain. I know a lot of people listen to this program. If the panelists are somewhat optimistic, they hang on. That's a signal to hang on to cash grain. I would view cash grain as toxic, and I think you need to probably keep trying to move it here as we move down the road.
Like Kurt said, we're not bearish, but we are scared about things that can happen. There's a lot of things. We're talking trade deals up in the air. We're talking a lot of things. Get some cash moved at a scale in, like I talked about. Get some of those beans priced above $10 if you can for fall, especially your added acres. We're going to stay with that app, you know, with that idea. And, you know, and the next thing we need to do is order your tickets for the All Day Outlook meeting at the Beef House.
Thank you so much. Of course, Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He, along with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, and we'll also have Merrill Crowley there, I'm sure, from Crowley Commodities out of Watsika, will be with us for the day in Covington, Indiana at the Beef House. That's on the 7th day of March. It's a Tuesday. Your tickets are available at willag.org, or you can buy them at 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. You've been listening to Commodity Week, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always hear the whole of the program on our website at willag.org. Again, our panelists today, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watsika, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.